Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We've played them already. You know, there's been so much inventory and so many snaps that have taken place since we played them dating back. So you've got a lot of different things that they've done. There's a lot of different things that we've done. And it's about figuring out, okay, what's the best way to put our players in situations that put them in spots to succeed, that accentuate their skill sets, but also gives us answers versus the defensive structures that they're presenting or the offensive things that, you know, we expect Coach Payton to present, you know, to Wade in our defense.
Middays on the Score.
Rams head coach Todd McVay. That is going to be the first of two games you are going to hear on Sports Radio 670. NFL coverage starts at 1 p.m. It's Rams and Saints and then Patriots Chiefs. This guy will be in New Orleans if he can get a flight out of here before all hell breaks loose. Eric Edholm is on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. He of Pro Football Weekly. Eric, how are you?
Thanks for jinxing me, Dan. I really appreciate that.
Well, I would not want to be traveling for a lot of reasons right now because of what's going on with TSA and what's going on with the weather everywhere. So just good luck getting there.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It should be a good game now. And then, you know, I've got the Senior Bowl right after that, so it worked out pretty well travel-wise.
We were talking to Mike Florio yesterday, Eric, and he broached the conversation of either Drew Brees or Tom Brady should one of them win a Super Bowl. Of them walking off into the sunset. It has stuck with me. It's been like this thing hovering around my brain for about 24 hours now. Had you had thoughts of this? Are there whispers of this? Or is it just kind of a fantasy?
I think a year ago with Brady, you know, there was some real question. And I think even, you know, I think there was some real doubt about that. And everybody said, you know, he could do the same thing. We beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl last year. This could be it. He could go hang out with his supermodel wife and live happily ever after. But, you know, recent comments from Brady seem to suggest that he's still all in for 2019 and possibly beyond. You know, he seems to have gotten back on that whole I'm going to play till 45 thing.
Yeah.
And when Brees signed his extension too, I mean, he's got so much money coming to him next year and he's still playing at a high level, even if recent games haven't been great. I mean, I guess I just can't see him walking away from that. So, is it possible? Yeah, I don't think I could rule it out. I have no inside knowledge on either guy. But, I mean, I guess I would just be surprised if the Patriots were caught with their pants down on this one and didn't feel like they sort of knew what Tom's going to do and that Brees would not take that salary next year.
I keep thinking that Bill Belichick would relish the opportunity to unleash something new and different and exotic defensively against a young quarterback. But this isn't just any young quarterback. And this is a guy who at home has been remarkably effective. So what has to give here?
I think what the Patriots have to do defensively, it may not be as much, you know, tomfoolery and chicanery and all that. They just can't let Tyreek Hill blow past their DBs like he did, not only in the meeting this year, but in the previous meeting in 2017. I mean, to me, I'm not saying that's going to shut down Mahomes or make the Chiefs, you know, limp offensively. I just think that when they look back at these two games, they're going to say Hill was the difference maker. He was the guy. And easier said than done, right? Not too many players are that fast to be able to cover him, but this kid they have, J.C. Jackson, he's kind of fascinating. He was undrafted rookie this year, was inactive in week 6 when they played Kansas City. He's kind of emerged as their best sort of vertical corner, the guy who can make plays downfield. So maybe you put Jackson on Hill, give him safety help, and then you might be willing to put Stephon Gilmore, another corner, on Travis Kelce. That could be the way they go in this one and say, all right, Sammy Watkins, you beat us, Steve. We'll live with that.
They've been able to get by after the Chiefs have in their terms of their run game with moving a bunch of pieces around. What stands out? What impresses you most about that system's ability to just go to the third string dude and be just fine?
Yeah, and Andy Reid, I mean, I think back to his early days in Philadelphia, too. Now, granted, they've had some really good players there. Yeah. You know, Deuce Daly back in the day, LeSean McCoy, Brian Westbrook, whoever else. They had Deion Lewis, who couldn't even crack the rotation there. But, you know, not only have they had a good eye for talent and plucking backs out of, you know, not big free agent splashes below the first round, things like that, but the system is also very favorable for backs too, because obviously it's going to be kind of a pass first system that you almost catch defenses off balance when you call a draw or when you throw a screen to the back, or, you know, when you do run some power inside or something like that. And they've adopted a lot of these college, you know, blocking schemes and spread run game things that maybe get overlooked a little bit. So that's why you can see a Damian Williams step in for a Kareem Hunt, and you get like 80-85% of the production at about one-tenth the commitment. So it's pretty darn impressive to see.
When you say what you said about Tyreek Hill blowing past the defensive backs, do you mean running by them to catch a long pass, or do you mean yards after the catch? Because it's just what's amazing to me is how he can get into spaces once he already has the ball. Once he becomes a ball carrier, it's not just like he's running fly patterns and is able to get guys on double moves and classic wide receiver stuff. He just burns past people almost like he's returning a kick.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the risk you run. If the Patriots, you know, they seem to have more success running man defense. You know, when I watched that game this week, back in week six, I mean, zone coverage was just trouble for them. You know, they seem to have some communication stuff and all that. But when they ran man coverage, they had a little bit more success containing them, except in the red zone. That was really where the one area. If you run man coverage against Tyreek Hill, that's the threat. He could run a slant, catch the ball 6-7 yards past the line of scrimmage and be gone. And you could still beat your safeties to where they want to go. And he can hit the corner of the field, you know, faster than maybe only maybe a half a dozen guys in the league can even approach that speed. So that's the risk right there. Yes, he can go downfield and catch the ball, you know, but he also can take that short pass, whether it's a screen, something, you know, right in the middle of the field, an in cut of some sort, or do the home run thing. That's how dangerous he is.
Speaking of screens, we saw the Patriots run a bunch of those offensively and to a great deal of success. Is that your expectation for how the offense is going to operate to keep up with the Chiefs if Tyreek Hill, if guys start getting loose and start going for yak?
You're saying how the Patriots are going to run their offense?
Yeah, in order to try to keep up if we do turn into something a little more high scoring
right
than the weather might otherwise lean toward.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, is can they hang in a shootout? I don't think they can. I mean, I just, you know, Josh Gordon's gone. Edelman had a great game last week, sure, but, you know, you're counting on him and James White as your primary pass catchers, let's say. Because Gronk right now, I mean, even with that explosive catch at the end of the game, I don't think you're counting on that too much. Remember the first matchup, too, he was held in check for the first 3.5 quarters. It was those two catches, I think it was on the last drive or second to last drive, that, you know, that padded his totals. He ended up close to 100 yards, but for most of that game, he wasn't a factor. We've seen what he looks like this year, so I think the screen game has to be there, and I do think the Chiefs will play some man coverage, and I think they will kind of dare Brady to throw the ball to beat him. I know that sounds a little crazy, a little risky, but I think they also fear what the Patriots can do in the run game. So there may be some opportunities, too, there. You'll see them run some pick routes. If they see man coverage, that's really what they do best. So that could be the kind of the offshoot to the screen game, is them running their pick stuff that they love on the outside.
The Superdome environment is going to test Jared Goff. It's going to test Sean McVay. It's going to test that pre-snap relationship. I'm wondering how you would approach it. If you were trying to disrupt that communication, if you were trying to mess up that finely tuned machine, what's the best way to do it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously last week what the Eagles were able to do was get the early lead and really kind of hush that crowd for a little bit, even if it was only, you know, a small portion of that game. That was absolutely a critical thing for them. You know, it didn't end up leading to a victory, but pretty nice little, you know, advantage to have when that dome suddenly quiets up a little bit. So, you know, obviously you have to avoid any kind of pressure on early downs. If you're going to throw on first down, the ball's got to be coming out quicker. That's been one of my complaints about McVay, is that sometimes they have too many of these slower developing pass plays. And we saw, like, in the Bears game or the Detroit game the week before or the Eagles game in the regular season the week after the Bears beat them, you know, they were giving up pressure to four rushers against their five blockers quite a bit. And you get into second and 12s or, you know, third and longs against the Saints defense, that place gets exceptionally loud. And that really creates a disadvantage for Goff, who, you know, didn't play great last week, didn't play great in the postseason game a year ago. You know, other than that kind of that shootout against the Chiefs, has come up smaller than he has big in some of these big games.
A lot of people are saying that the success recipe for the Rams is to run the ball with C.J. Anderson and Todd Gurley. That, to me, it speaks of a lack of confidence in Goff, like you're kind of intimating there. Like, I'm not confident in him. But I think the Saints defense is a lot better than people give it credit for. And I know they're going to be without Sheldon Rankins, but David Onyemata, he's good against the run. He's the guy who's going to step in. And while I'd rather have Rankins, I think that's a decent player there. I don't think the advantage is to the Rams to just run the ball. I don't think that happens for them.
Yeah, no, that's the interesting debate that McVay's going to have here. Will he be more aggressive on fourth downs, too? Because last week he seemed to kind of take his foot off the pedal a couple times. You know, obviously the run game was working as well as it was. It was hard to gripe with what they were doing. But I agree, this Saints defense has been much better against the run. Losing Rankins hurts. You mentioned Onyemata's a good player. Cam Jordan is a great run-stopping defensive end. He's one of these power players who can also rush the passer. But don't overlook what he does. Pretty heady linebackers. The DBs will come up and support, too. So it's a good system they have. I don't think they've allowed a 100-yard rusher in over a year. So that's something they have going for them. Will Rankins hurt? Yeah, but maybe more towards the end of the game when some of these guys used to playing 20 and 30 snaps like Onyemata and Tyler Davison now are being stretched out to 30, 40, 50 snaps a game. So early on, I think they'll be able to kind of sort of limit them in the run game and what they can do.
Eric, I was reading that Andres Pete had surgery. He's got that hand that he's been dealing with. I guess playing through a whole bunch of pain. He's a huge part of keeping Drew Brees clean. What do you know about his situation and his availability and his pain tolerance?
Yeah, that's going to be a big issue. Now, obviously, last week was a rough game for him because he had the four penalties. He did play through the injury. You know, he was a full participant yesterday that I'm aware of. So, I mean, I think they're going to try to protect it as best they can and still get him out there. And so he's a fascinating player, right? I mean, former first-round pick. They thought he was a tackle. He's settled in at guard. He's been pretty darn good for them, but he has a couple games where he doesn't look so great. You know, obviously last week was one of those. And if we're talking about going up against that Rams interior, Ndamukong Suh coming off probably his best performance as a Ram last week, we know what Aaron Donald's capable of. That would still worry me quite a bit if I was Sean Payton and I was starting to think about what I could do up the middle and, you know, what interior pressure could do to kind of wreck my timing a little bit.
If you're Matt Nagy and you're watching all of these teams that remain, even as you're enjoying having just won the Pro Football Writers Coach of the Year award, what is informing the next steps for the Bears offense? What are certain of any of these four teams, any single one or anything that you see across the board where a Bears fan could say, okay, maybe more of this, maybe more of that, maybe here's when games matter most, what can be reliable for an offense that needs to improve?
Yeah, well, first of all, I hope he's wearing some sort of mouth guard, because when I was out there at Hallis Hall this week and he started talking about watching the other playoff games, kind of forcing himself to sit down, he was grinding his teeth down to the enamel there. So I got a sense that this was sort of painful torture for him. And I heard the Rams kind of talking about this week was they lose their first game last year. They sort of forced themselves to kind of watch the other teams too. And I think what you can take away from it, you know, the Bears – constantly we're trying to strive for, I don't want to say that balance, but the right mix in the run game and when to use it and how to use it. It never quite got there. There were spurts where it looked good. There were games where it didn't work at all. You know, even though they tried to run the football and do so creative in a lot of, you know, a lot of different ways, handing to receivers, QB scrambles, things like that. I think watching all four of these teams sort of come up with a run game when they didn't necessarily always have it all season long, maybe that's sort of a reminder to Nagy that, you know, these things can develop over time. They're not instant grits. They're going to be able to, you know, if we get the right mix of players in the backfield and the right blockers, we too can run the football the way these four teams have.
No self-respecting Southerner uses instant grits. I'm wondering, though, Pace and Nagy will likely do both of these things, both add something into their running back mix and fix whatever blocking scheme or tighten things up or whatever. But yeah. which do they need more, in your opinion? Which needs to be fixed more than the other? I mean, Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard are ostensibly functional running backs, and yep. one's an all-pro. You know, I mean, that's what needs to happen more.
I wouldn't be shocked if we see a little tinkering up front on the offensive line. I mean, I have no knowledge of this, but I wouldn't be shocked if James Daniels at some point, whether it's prior to OTAs, prior to camp, somewhere during the season, who knows, maybe he's better at center and maybe Whitehair is better at guard. That could be the kind of thing that, you know, by the end of the season, it's only nominal gains, you know, half a yard per carry or a quarter of a yard per carry. But over time, that matters. So maybe that's the move there. Maybe they decide, you know what, Bobby Massey, we like you, but Rashard Coward has more upside, or we want to save a little money, and he could help spring things outside. Getting another blocking tight end, I don't think would be a bad idea, that sort of deal. But I don't know. I was left fascinated at the idea that Pace and Nagy, and I'd love to hear what you guys think. I mean, they took six or seven questions on Kareem Hunt yeah. and didn't really shut it down. I felt like a trial balloon to me to see how the reaction would be. I don't know.
I don't like a trial balloon. I think it's a window into how far down the road they may be in making yeah. sure that door remains open. You know, I'm not the trial could be, is it internal or external? You know, the question is, everybody's if Virginia McCaskey is shown the most recent video, is that a hard no? Or, and what I keep going back and forth on here, there's so many things I go back and forth on, Eric, because it's a multi-layered situation. But yep. he is not only a guy who fits exactly what they need, he is literally the guy. He's the rushing champ. He's the guy from his system. They're friends. He's the best at exactly what they need. So it's not a neutral situation, is my first thought. And then we came down to these improper comps, I believe, in some ways, to domestic abuse and to Ray McDonald and to Addison Russell yeah. and all those different directions. It's just I'm not excusing it, and I'm not saying right. one is better than the other, but part of me is thinking this isn't the complicated issue of domestic violence. This guy just hits people. He hits men. He hits women. He gets mad, and he punches people. He's just sort of a low-rent, violent guy. And I don't know if I'm being honest. I don't know if I don't think of that as sort of as villainously as I do the pernicious evil of what Addison Russell was doing. They're different things.
I think that's, you know, look, we're condemning both of them, I think was what
Thank
we're saying
you.
Here.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Violence is violence. We, you know, we have to look at it through you know, the broad lens here and say what he did was not good at all and cannot be accepted. However, right, I think there's a special emphasis put on domestic violence, those people close and you know, family members, girlfriends, whoever, other partners, what have you. That, you know, that takes on a different amplification, I think. So, yeah, I mean, Nagy now coming off this award, coming off a division title, 12-4 season, I think he's bought himself a lot of credibility, right? Is he going to put his neck on the line? Because this will be his call, I think. I know Pace will be the guy signing him, but that's the big question. Has he earned enough credibility in year one to say, I can vouch for this guy? I will make sure he's going to, you know, toe the line if he does come here.
Boy, if you're doing that and you're taking all that credibility and putting on top of it a decision yep. like that, you have to be right.
You do, and it's so risky for a first-time head coach. Yes, he sees his stock is soaring right now, even with the loss in the playoffs. I mean, you know, this is a critical sort of flashpoint if they do end up signing him, even with protections in the deal and even with less money than he would get in the open market if nothing happened, blah, blah, blah. It's still a big risk.
It's a massive investment of recently gained political capital.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the way to put it. Yep.
Wow. All right, Eric, good luck traveling and enjoy New Orleans.
All right, thank you. I will talk to you guys down the road.
Eric Edholm of Pro Football Weekly, brought to you by Subway. Satisfy your steak appetite with Subway restaurants. $3.99 6-inch steak and cheese. Hurry in this month only, January only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
Not for nothing. It's well. well-walked territory, well-walked ground, I guess, Kareem Hunt conversation, especially since it's just a hypothetical at this point. But since Edholm brought it up, or we brought it up, when I say he better be right if that's where he's headed, it's not just about football fit and scheme and all that stuff. He's got to be right when the experts that they'll invariably talk to tell them that he has completed this, that, and the other thing in terms of rehabilitation, and he's better and he's more fit to play. Like, you have to be right about that too. You can't be wrong for the off-the-field stuff. You can't be wrong for the on-the-field stuff either. That's a tightrope that they'll have to walk, whomever makes that decision to bring him in.
There's some baseball reporting that was in the Tribune today. It came from a cable TV station that is partially owned by the Mets called SNY that had to do with why Chili Davis is now a Met instead of a member of the Cubs. There is some incomplete reporting being done. I've got the real story. I can tell you what actually happened, and it is what I have been saying for a while here. But when I saw this today, I reached out to some people who know exactly what went down, and I will tell you how this happened and what's real and what's not when we come back. Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
It kind of looked back at the end of the year after putting our heads down, getting underwater and trying to finish that thing off. You turn around and you say, oh, God, something went terribly wrong. But we were such a productive offense the first half that at the end of the year, when you look back at it, the numbers weren't terrible, but it was kind of those last 30, 40, 50 games where it was like we could have done something better.
That's Cub Ian Happ, who joined us earlier this week, talking about his exit interview, what they talked about as this team disbanded at the end of the year. The bottom of the hour brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. It's rivalry weekend for the Chicago Wolves as they host Rockford on Saturday night in an Illinois Lottery Cup game in Milwaukee on Sunday afternoon. And for the 25th anniversary, parking is free, courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. So here's Mark Gonzalez's report in the Tribune today. And so the Mets hired Chili Davis as hitting coach in December, 2 months after the Cubs fired him following their exit meetings with players and coaches. Uh-huh. And we now know that Anthony Iaposi is the team's third hitting coach in as many seasons. Joe Maddon yesterday denied a report from New York that the Cubs caved, using that word, caved, to the wishes of star sluggers Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant when they fired Chili Davis after one season as hitting coach. The report by SNY, a cable TV station partially owned by the Mets, stated that according to multiple sources, Cubs president Theo Epstein didn't want to fire Davis. The story singled out Rizzo and Bryant among a group of players who complained about Davis. Maddon, who coached Davis with the Angels in the mid-90s, rejected the notion that the players fired Davis and stood firmly by his former coach. Okay. Here's the truth, and I heard this at the time, and if you have been listening to the show, I told you at the time as this was going on. There were at least six players that expressed very, very clearly in their exit interviews dissatisfaction with Chili Davis and dissatisfaction with the relationship that he had with some critical bats on this team individually. Now, some of the names that I had heard were not Bryant and Rizzo,
mm-hmm.
but someone, a team source, has explained to me the caved report is false. That Theo Epstein never immediately went in with the intention of firing Chili Davis, and he didn't cave to anybody. He made a rational business decision based on the hitters who, in this case, are essentially the customers. The team could not go this year with those many fractured relationships. They couldn't do it. It wasn't a matter of caving to anybody. It was a matter of listening to what players were saying. However you want to phrase this, I just think the improper word there is caved.
Is that the front office went in trying to keep Chili Davis.
And that eventually,
and otherwise acquiesced to players that they wouldn't have done otherwise.
That there was some sort of power struggle between players and upper management. And they said, Rizzo and Bryant, those guys had put their foot down and said, you're getting rid of Chili Davis or else. No, it's not what happened.
There's a sense, though, I think from whether it's fans or media or just kind of outside influence, that the Cubs are going to have to push and struggle against a couple of internal relationship issues this year, asking Joe Maddon to coach more, asking Joe Maddon to be a little bit different, asking for more urgency or having to force some relationships to happen fast in Anthony Iaposi. And that's why I think you hired him as opposed to someone else. This guy has a track record with a good number of those young players when he was a hitting instructor in the minor leagues. So you've kind of greased those wheels some, but I get the sense that there's that kind of feeling that the Cubs have to force themselves against all season long. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, because as I've said, you know, when we found out that Joe Maddon was going to be left to complete the last year of his contract without an extension, if there's anybody that can figure out how to do that and work around it, it's this front office, that clubhouse, and Joe. They just seem well-equipped to function with that piece of information hanging over everybody's head.
Yeah, Theo kind of put it out there when he conducted the postseason press conference in the way that he did. And I don't know how this resolves, because there is a lot of space in which to sort of build his idea, whatever his concept was, and his angry, disappointed, embittered, somewhat sour.
Kind of thumb pointing.
Of course,
there was thumb pointing.
There was thumb pointing. But when he talked about trying to sweep a series you should sweep, winning the games you can win at the time because they all count the same, it was meatball Theo. It really was. It's a matter of squaring that with now having made these moves and now doing what you can do to make sure your hitters are as comfortable as they could possibly be, and then maybe have people grumbling that you're not cutting huge checks for massive names in the free agent market.
Well, you did that last year.
Of how one meets back up to the other.
Well, you're also going to have to fight against the fact that this division has gotten better than it was last year. I mean, there were visions of multiple division titles. I think from within the front office and from outside of it, they were reasonable. But the Cardinals got better with Paul Goldschmidt. The Brewers have gotten better. And I think the Lorenzo Cain thing paid off as much as anything else. I mean, obviously Christian Yelich wins an MVP. That's absolutely terrific. But I think the Reds are going to be tougher. The Pirates are tougher. Maybe not the Pirates. But that's a tough division now, too.
It appears we have, again, somebody not quite understanding what I'm saying here. The 708 says, that's semantics, Dan. All this means is Theo made the move before the players could force his hand. No.
No.
There was no forcing of any hand. There was frank and honest conversation about how they felt about these relationships. And even if he went into this without necessarily going in saying, it's not like the season ended and Theo Epstein thought, that's it, I'm getting rid of Chili Davis, we're blowing out another coaching staff. It's not something they were looking forward to doing. They had no choice. He had no choice after they got to this point, after he heard what he heard, again, from at least six different players. There was no forcing of a hand. There was no players sort of secretly grumbling and unionizing and saying, hey, if we all say the same thing, say we can get Chili fired. It wasn't
right.
That. It's relatively simple, and it's consistent with everything I was telling you from the moment the season ended and when the decision was made, that there was a dissatisfaction across the board to the point where it would have been untenable to run that back this year.
Over philosophical differences, right? I mean, like, approach, what you're trying to get out of it at bat, the actual application of skills to event, right?
When he said launch angle isn't a fad,
You
heard it right there.
I mentioned this the other day, but one of the first pieces that came out of the New York Press, I forget it was the Post or the Daily News, and you had Chili Davis in a long-form interview talking about how launch angle is dead. That he's trying to kill it, that he's trying to teach situational hitting however he likes to hit. And Joe's right, he's a good hitting coach, but fighting in that way sometimes just doesn't sound right to particular players. And when it so happens, it seems in this case, like you've got six players that it doesn't really jive well with or doesn't really fit well with or doesn't really teach well to, you gotta go.
That's all.
That's your ball game.
Yeah, it's not hard, and I don't really think that a new hitting coach is that big a deal. But when we went back and revisited the conversation we had with Ian Happ about Chili Davis from the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern,
yeah,
and if you were sitting there that day, you could tell.
Yeah, you can see it.
You could tell. It was sort of like Wilson Contreras and Jim Hickey, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of figuring stuff out still going on when we sat down with those guys at the Brick House.
And we said, what's your relationship like with Chili Davis? What does he say to you? And he's like, yeah, he says bam.
Just bam a lot. Just bam.
Yeah, he says bam a lot.
And then Javi took over, which was just a delight.
Well, which
Blammers!
But
no, not Blammers.
But I was left after
that's a death
that,
sandwich.
As we discussed, I was left after that thinking, yeah, it doesn't sound like he's getting a whole lot out of the Chili Davis thing.
Long way to go.
Right?
Ian Happ, strikeout struggles included, Ian Happ had the second highest strikeout rate in baseball for players with over 450 at-bats. Only Chris Davis had a higher strikeout rate. That's going to be something that they're looking to fix. But his power, his on-base percentage, he had a 30-point increase in on-base percentage from his first to second year. Like, the selection, the pitch selection, the eye is still there. You know, and the power is there as well. Like, those are guys, those are, in this modern age of baseball, with strikeouts being what they are, those are guys and talent sets that you've got to evolve. You cannot let those stagnate. And you can't do it with a hitting coach that apparently doesn't get along. When we come back, more discussion about Championship Sunday. I have a couple of notes and some news in the NFL as well that might affect the Bears.
And a chance to win $1,000 in cash with a text keyword that I will reveal in just a couple of moments on the Score.
Every single game is important. I mean, you're playing in the AFC Championship. I mean, that's the motivation that you need, that you want to go out there and get your goal. So for me, I focus on what's ahead. Every single game is important. This is a huge game, especially for this fan base and this community. And so I'm excited. I get to have the opportunity to play against a great team and a great atmosphere.
That's your MVP. It's Patrick Mahomes talking about his coming matchup with the New England Patriots. This is the Bernstein and McKnight Show, doing a little work on Championship Sunday here before we get out on a Friday.
And we'll be working Monday as well.
We are working Monday. That's right.
Perfect.
And a Bulls game in the afternoon, but you and I are here for stuff.
Yeah, I think there's an early out. I think we lose, like, shave a half hour or something off the show,
like
an
that.
Hour. Mm-hmm. What is it?
I think it's like 11:45.
Oh.
No. All right,
that's
then.
All.
Still happy to be here and do.
That's
a whole
one
bunch
of the underrated sports days. Is MLK Day basketball all day?
Yeah, just kind of have it on.
You're not wrong. You're not, because then you get to enjoy it. The whole Christmas slate has always, at least in my family, they're not. I don't have a whole bunch of sports fans in the family. You know, when we gather for Christmas and whatnot.
Lucky
so
you.
We don't get to leave that on.
You also don't have people saying asking a bunch of stupid questions about stuff.
I didn't say that. At no point did I say that. Okay. I don't know. Why would you jump
maybe
to
just
that?
Not about sports, man.
My brother's an idiot, all right? I love him very much, but he's a moron and asks a whole bunch of questions.
And a Timberwolves fan.
And a big Timberwolves fan. Yeah, absolutely. Moved to Minneapolis and just decided to be a Timberwolves hipster. That's what he decided to do. Best of luck to him. He's enjoying a terrible season. A couple of things. With Mahomes, I don't know whether there's been a playoff matchup, a championship matchup between two quarterbacks whose resumes are so disparate. Pat Mahomes and Tom Brady.
One of the greatest of all time against an unproven guy in his first full year in control.
But it's weird the way you set up the dichotomy, right? Not you specifically, but like that one would. Not only is Mahomes that kind of inexperienced and has all kinds of people asking about, because of his lack of experience, all kinds of people asking about, oh, I wonder what that wrinkle Belichick is going to throw at him.
That's what I asked. Oh, you're making fun of me?
No, not at all. I think those are valid questions. And we're going to see it play out. Like, it's absolutely going to happen. Bill Belichick isn't going to throw him a bunch of vanilla zone. He's like, here, there you go, enjoy that.
Yeah, you'll have if you're broadcasting the game, you've got a very easy sort of changing of the guard narrative if the Chiefs emerge victorious and he plays well.
But it's not I think you can say pretty definitively about Pat Mahomes, that's not a flash in the pan. It's just, it's not this quarterback who's found it. It's not Kevin Cobb for a year. It's not Nick Foles who lit the world on fire in 2013. Everybody's going, I don't know. Or even last season.
But we kind of knew that too with Russell Wilson, like, right? I mean, we had the sort of the same thing with
third round draft pick.
With Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
and
but you're hedging the whole time. You're going third round draft pick. I don't know if he has weapons. I don't know if he's got this whole thing. I think it's a wider gulf, or at least it feels that way to me. And the way it works is much more interesting than I think Russell Wilson, because of the season that Mahomes put up. I mean, he is your MVP. He is. I heard McNeil and Parkins talking about this the other day. I can't remember what they set the over-under at. 2.5 MVPs for Pat Mahomes in his career. He will win one.
It's hard to win MVPs.
Right, he set it at 2.5, I think.
So that means you're betting that he's going to win three. You're betting he's going to, after this year,
he's
two more.
He's 23 years old. You know, I mean, it's I quarterbacks are safer than ever. I mean, in terms of just, you know, what kind of contact you can put on them. Tom Brady's figured out a way to rewire his brain for contact. So if Mahomes, you know, stumbles into that perimeter of wisdom, look out.
He's just got to drink the TB12, $24 electrolyte water, right?
Ball, all
and
that
get
kind
the
of stuff.
Sphere and everything. Next thing you know, his brain is rewired for contact.
Get electrotherapy, all that kind of stuff. That helps. Some news, too, in the NFL. Did you see that the Cowboys have dismissed Scott Linehan as their offensive coordinator?
I did not. I thought they were making a big statement about bringing him back.
No, that's just happening in the last couple of minutes. There is many reports that they are going to part ways with their offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan. They expect an announcement from Jerry Jones anytime soon. I assume Jerry Jones will then hire an offensive coordinator. The Cowboys were 22nd in points per game, 22nd in yards per play, and 22nd in yards per game this season on offense. All that despite having Ezekiel Elliott for a played a full season, right? I mean, that was an offense that was, I think, expected to do a whole hell of a lot more.
Here's the statement. Mike Garofalo has the Cowboys statement. The Cowboys have fired Scott Linehan. This is Jason Garrett. This was not an easy decision because of how highly we regard Scott Linehan as a football coach and as a person. He and I had some really positive, substantive, and open discussions, which took place in the latter part of this week, and we ultimately agreed that it would be in the best interest of all of the parties involved if we were to make a change at the offensive coordinator position.
Make that change.
This was very much a mutual decision. There was a great deal of common ground and shared understanding between both of us during our meetings. Scott has had an incredibly positive effect on our football team. He's been instrumental in the development and success of a significant number of our veteran and younger players. He is an outstanding football coach, a great friend, and we wish him and his family nothing but the absolute best moving forward. What was it? I know it is, but when Gwyneth Paltrow and Coldplay frontman Chris Martin divorced, what did she call it? A conscious uncoupling? Remember, she came
really?
Up with some...
No, I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
That.
Gwyneth doesn't get
Isn't
divorced.
Isn't that the pair that named their kid Apple?
Yes.
Yeah, so I can't imagine having ever cared.
But Gwyneth doesn't get divorced.
Gwyneth.
She consciously uncouples.
Good. It would be good to bad to unconsciously uncouple. You don't expect it
to be cheaper that way.
I don't know, man. Not at all. I think somebody hit me in the head with a frying pan.
This hurt. I don't imagine that, you know, because only it's top of mind because the defensive coaching staff of the Bears has changed over so greatly after Vic Fangio left for the Denver Broncos head coaching job. You wouldn't imagine somebody comes calling for Mark Helfrich or something like that.
I think anything can happen.
That's why you hire Matt Nagy as head coach instead of hiring Vic Fangio as head coach.
Yeah, would you worry if Mark Helfrich left?
No, Mike Florio's talked about it a ton with everybody that we've had on. You hire the offensive head coach because if he leaves, that's disastrous for your quarterback. If you hire the defensive head coach and your offensive coordinator leaves, that's disastrous for your quarterback.
That really is just a drippingly saccharine firing statement, isn't it?
Especially when you get Jason Garrett as your head coach. The guy has actively been holding back that team almost as long as he's been there.
Yeah, don't fire him and then go out of your way to wax poetic on how great the guy is that you're just firing.
Remind
if he's that
me again,
great, don't fire him.
Remind me again who made the statement. Is it
Jason Garrett.
Nonsense.
It is time.
Probably ushered through the words of Jerry Jones. Like, you had to give it to him with a spell check. I mean, Jerry Jones has been holding that franchise back. They don't have a general manager.
Do you want to win $1,000 in cash on the score? Uh-huh. Yeah? Do you?
I do.
This hour's keyword is hammer. Hammer. Text it to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword is hammer. They put me in the mix. To 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply.
Julian Edelman is not taking questions about his Bet Against Us t-shirts.
Then don't wear it.
Yeah, well, Julian, $29.99 for a t-shirt.
Come on, you troll everybody. Dude, Bet Against Us. We're a page, everybody hates us.
No.
I'm not taking questions. I don't talk about things like that.
It's so
strange. Why not?
I was going to say it's strange how apparently thin-skinned the Patriots have chosen to become over the last week or so, but that's all engineered. All of that's engineered. And I'm not buying the sense that the Patriots have the defensive speed or the offensive quickness to dismantle the Chiefs the way they dismantled the Chargers. I can't see it from here. I could be completely 100% wrong. I think they could probably keep up in a bit of a shootout because I don't think that Chiefs defense is – and Eric Berry, I guess, is going to play. I don't know. But I don't think that Chiefs defense is as good as a lot of people would like to make it out to be. I think the Patriots could probably hang in there and score points because that's what he does. That's what that offense is able to do all of a sudden.
Even without peak Gronk?
I think Gronk is dangerous in short spaces. I know Ed Holm didn't want to go to exactly that spot, like your nose tackle or whatever, but I think he's dangerous. And I don't, you know, best of luck covering him in those spots. And he's blocking like a bastard, too.
Great.
He's hitting people all over the place. I really just don't buy the Belichick undressing of the Chiefs. I don't see it. And for that matter, I don't know how the Rams stay in this thing.
You don't know how they stay in it?
I don't know how the Rams stay in this thing.
Running the football, probably, like you said.
Yeah, that would be how they do it.
Take the crowd out of
it. Take the air out of the ball and make your per play thing or your per play number just really, really small and don't run a whole bunch, but run a whole bunch.
Yeah, it doesn't take much to get that crowd back into it, too. I don't think you ever take that crowd out of it because there will be that drive where all of a sudden you haven't heard it yet and you come out there and you can't communicate what you need to communicate to a young quarterback who you might not trust to see everything he needs to see in real time.
I think it's on Drew Brees, though. Jared Goff is going to have to play well in order to do this. He's got to play like he did for the first 10 weeks of the season, not like he started crapping out after the Bears game and then that Eagles game and then not really figuring anything out. Sure, there's a Chiefs game in there somewhere, but the last 10 or so for him, fine. His road splits are bad. But Drew Brees has to make some of those impressive throws that you saw early. He's got to trust. I don't know if it's Michael Thomas or if you got to, you know, move Alvin Kamara out of the backfield and let him not move him out of the backfield, but take him from the backfield and sprinting down the seam. Mm-hmm. You saw that pass come back on a penalty last week for them. I think that's the way they'd like that offense to move a little bit more. And you've heard, I mean, I've read comments from Ingram, from Kamara all week long. There is this edge that run game, that Saints run game has been carrying all week. They're talking like old school, going to put the fear of God in you with each and every run kind of thing.
Well,
like
they
have
running,
understood that.
And they were running some I formation, isolation block, meet you in the hole and
punch you in the mouth.
Yeah, there was some of that. You know, there was, you haven't seen a lot of it this year, but it's interesting that it's some of the most critical points in this season. We've seen several teams run actual old power offense.
Speaking of, have you seen the video going around on Twitter? It's like an NFL Films thing. The Saints fake punt that they ran and how they diagnosed when they wanted to run it. They had seen, this is awesome film study stuff, they had seen, the Saints had, that when the Eagles left in their defensive front, like their front four, front six-ish on special teams, that Fletcher Cox wasn't coming off the ball at all. When they left in defense on punts, he would just kind of stand, and it happened three times against the Bears. They circled it on tape. Fletcher's just kind of standing up and letting himself get pushed back. He's taking a peek back there, making sure the ball gets kicked, mm-hmm. and then turning around and doing his job. They identified that and engineered that fake punt to run right at Fletcher Cox as he's standing up and backing off and not playing hard. Go watch the video. Find it. I think I retweeted it like a day or so ago, something like that. But I caught it again on the NFL Network or something. It's that kind of attention to detail that Peyton has mm-hmm. and that his coaches have. That I get that, you know, you've got some solid coaching staffs all around, even last week, and Doug Peterson and the four that are active now. But that's that kind of stuff that picks up a possession where you need it.
We just tweeted it from the show account. So at Bernstein underscore MCK.
That's football porn.
And I was right that 4 days ago, Jason Garrett did say the Cowboys were keeping Scott Linehan.
I am shocked. Shocked to find that there's gambling going on in this institution.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. It's rivalry weekend for the Chicago Wolves as they host Rockford on Saturday night in an Illinois Lottery Cup game in Milwaukee Sunday afternoon for the 25th anniversary. Parking is free, courtesy of Kia. Visit ChicagoWolves.com. McNeil and Parkins are coming up next. They are at the Cubs convention across the river at the Sheraton Grand Hotel. They will have all kinds of Cubs guests today, and I have to pick up from where we left off yesterday. Our discussion yesterday about the movie Major League.
Yeah.
A cast member of the movie was listening when we were talking about it and sent me an email.
You didn't tell me this till now?
I thought I'd save it.
I'm very excited.
Good, we'll do that.
Who was it?
You'll see.
All right.
Next on the score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.